32nd Ward Alderman Scott Wagisback, Chicago author Stacey Bayless, and the cast of the new show, Haymarket, the Anarchist Songbook. And now here's your host, a man who cries every time he watches the movie Cutting Edge, Justin Kaufman.
Come on. Where'd she get this stuff? One time. Maybe two times. But I dare you at the end of Cutting Edge to not weep. That's a dare. Good evening, everybody. It's Justin Kaufman. It's a download with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. It's true. I am a romantic. I'm not going to lie. I may have teared up just a little bit in reading Stacey Vallis' new novel, The Wedding Girl, today.
Ah.
It was a great novel, and I was going to do the sort of radio thing where maybe I read the first page, and I'm like, well, the first page says this, and then I move on to something else. But I got caught in it, and I read the whole thing, cover to cover.
Nice.
It's a really good story, and Stacey Vallis has written 9 novels. I know. Isn't that crazy? And she's young. She bases a lot of her stuff in the foodie world, right? So this piece is about the character that she writes is a pastry chef who is left at the altar,
mm-hmm.
and then she has to pick up. And it's really interesting. I really like it. And we're gonna have Stacey here at the big table to talk about it. And you know, my first question is, why is this not a Katherine Heigl movie?
Yeah,
like it's already set up for it. It's so good.
Do we know if?
Well, we'll ask her. If she says no, then we'll
option it.
Yeah, we'll Kaufman Zim Kaufman Productions will option the book.
Yeah, because I see Hallmark Christmas movie.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I see February.
Having not read it,
I see I see February release, limited release. That's what I see.
Get Gary Marshall to direct it.
Yeah, right. Gary Marshall. Maybe get some cameos from real food people, you know, Rick Bayless and Grant Achatz and whatever. They kind of walk by and they say hi to the character, things like that. Make it a real Chicago story. Get the Banos family involved.
Love it.
Yeah. You know, we're ahead of ourselves. We still, there may already be a plan. So we'll talk with Stacey Vallis about that coming up at the big table. Later this hour, we're going to talk a little city council politics. Chicago was busy today, mostly about airports, from privatization to security to taking over who gets contracts at the airport. Do we need an independent board that supervises contracts at O'Hare Airport? That's what some progressive aldermen believe, and the union. And, of course, Mayor Emanuel says no. We will talk with Alderman Scott Wagisback about that coming up later in the hour, as well as Mike Fouché from AlderTrack, who will be here to lay out all the news in city politics today. Coming up a little bit later in the show, a new play, Haymarket Anarchist Songbook. This is the 130th anniversary of the Haymarket Riot. It actually happened earlier this month, but May is known as Labor Month, and we're going to talk with some of the writers and performers that are going to perform some of their songs tonight. We'll talk about that amazing story. That is a tremendous story in our history, and I think appropriate time to talk about it is, you know, we see President Obama doing something for labor today by expanding the overtime rules. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. And character flaws tonight, the best of sketch comedy, improv, and characters that Chicago has to offer. And we got some good stuff tonight. The Download's daughter's boyfriend's going to come pick her up for prom. So we'll see how that goes. I'm a little nervous. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, some other faves tonight on the program. All right. You know what? Let's news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Pete Zimmerman providing production. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to carry out. This is a download on WGN Radio. Let's get to the carry out. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here
today's top stories, finally, the city is doing something about the biggest issue of our time, Airbnb. Airbnb. Our troubles are over. Well, not so fast. The ordinance to tax renters and put in safeguards has been held up in council by the mayor. I guess Airbnb doesn't have enough regulation. Also, they should have a tax on that one closet that's always locked. What's in there? More linens? Or stuff I can't even comprehend. Oh, man, open those closets! More news out of city council. Aldermen want to privatize airport security. Because that's what I want. Mall cops checking my luggage. No thanks. This issue cannot be resolved by privatizing security at the airport. Alderman, have you not seen the show 24? Private security? That's always where the bad guys are. Come on. Also, you thought pre-check was expensive now? Imagine when it's run by a private company. Oh, you want to get through security faster? Have you tried the fast gold premium fast lane? Just give us your bank routing number. Also, some aldermen are smelling blood in the water and want to appoint an independent board to deal with airport contracts. Isn't that the mayor's purview? Isn't that why you become mayor? So you can give your friends a couple of airport kiosks, like selling sunglasses and neck pillows? Aldermen and unions want to take that from the mayor, so what, they can set up their idea? A Chili's 3? Get it? Presidential candidate Donald Trump released a list of judges he would consider appointing to the Supreme Court, which is highly unusual for a candidate to do, especially when there is a sitting president who has already put forth a nomination. So, come on. Donald Trump, who will be with you in the war room when you bomb China? Here are the 11 people who are going to be in the war room when I bomb China. Really got to work on that impression. The Obama administration just announced they're changing overtime rules, forcing overtime pay for anybody who has a salary under $47,000. This is a move to restore some perks to the middle class. Republican Speaker of the House Paul Ryan called it a disaster. Which really got to work on the definition of what disaster means. And other small business owners said that they would be forced to take away salaries and make those people hourly. Then they massaged their big robber baron mustaches and made everybody work on the weekend. I know it's tough to have to pay people for their time, but if an employee is working more than the agreed upon hours a week, they should get paid, right? Is there really an argument against that? I don't want to. Is that the argument? The Olympics in Rio are not looking good, but officials say they aren't moving them because, well, let's be honest, nobody wants them. It says a lot when the Olympics will stay in Rio despite the deadly mosquito virus, incomplete construction, terrible economy, street violence, and corruption. Wait, those are all positives for landing the Olympics? So tell me again why Chicago didn't get them? Because last time I checked, West Nile, so much sexier than Zika. In weather, another good one. You know what? May's kind of like an old Pinto. Just keep turning it over. It's going to start soon. In sports, here it is. End of days. Both the Cubs and the Sox lost yesterday. Here comes. The Sox have now lost 4 in a row. Although general manager Rick Hahn did hint at the prospect of a major deal in the works, but we may not see it for a few weeks. Starting pitching, perhaps? The Sox strength has been their bullpen, which is now sputtering, so maybe a closer? Maybe another bat? Maybe a starting pitcher closer bat? They got one of those? On the north side, Jason Hayward hit a home run yesterday, his first of the season. Most right fielders hitting like in the 10 range at this point. But hey, good for him. He could be the new Jorge Soler, who is now the new Dave Kingman, without the King part. The Cavs blew out the Raptors last night, game 2 of the NBA Western Conference Finals tonight. Warriors versus Thunder. Warriors, Thunder. The Sixers got the number one pick yesterday and said they aren't dealing it. They're going to draft another 19-year-old. They will pay them with Dave and Buster's Fun Bucks, since most of the team can't get into a bar. And finally tonight, R&B star Chris Brown is denying that he and his friends were busted for smoking pot on a private jet. Sources say police were called when Brown and friends toked up after being told not to. Brown said he doesn't, quote, need drugs, and he's being profiled because he's young and black. Wait, profiled by the marijuana smoke on an airplane? I mean, it was a private jet. There's nobody else on it. To be young, rich, and entirely stupid. That's the carryout for May 18th, 2016. Hey, did you order the side of veggies? Oh, man, we forgot them. I'm sorry. Here, you know what? We'll give you double fries, and we'll call it even.
And I like Chris Brown's music. Just not the artist. More to come here on The Download, including Mike Fouché from AlderTrack and 32nd Ward Alderman Scott Wagespach. We'll talk about the independent board needed to take over O'Hare. Is it necessary? It's The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk with Mike Fouché from AlderTrack, also 32nd Ward Alderman Scott Wagespach. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Power, $3.3 billion of power. Now, I tell you, when I sold my company to Chrysler, they wrote me a check for $1.1 billion.
Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, in for Rob Martier, it's Ross Perot.
I'm going to attempt to read the news now. Voodoo really, economics.
We brought it out in you tonight. Like
Little Ross was inside waiting to come up. He's been in there for a while.
Well, now that I know you have this skill, we got to take it past radio. I'm gonna go shop the Ross Perot one man show.
You know what? But you know what's fun about this? I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm trying to remain somewhat objective. You get characters like Ross Perot and Donald Trump that run for president. Now, I will give them the fact that I think their intentions are pure, even though they're completely nuts. This is kind of like a cleansing thing. This is cathartic,
right?
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it, you know, gets us talking about things that maybe we haven't talked about in a while.
Like Ross Perot.
Like Ross Perot.
No, but you're right. I mean, I think that there's something to, I mean, that's what a good candidate's, that, I guess that's what a good campaign season is supposed to do, as opposed to just sort of, you know, talking.
Trundling along.
Talking hope and change and all that stuff.
Here's another Kennedy, Bush. We're voting on Bush again.
And another Clinton.
There they come. Well, you know, let's give it about 10 years and we'll see Chelsea Clinton in the national headlines.
And Jenna Bush.
Yeah.
It's going to be Jenna versus Chelsea.
Right.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. A little cool it now.
I want to sing in a falsetto.
That's good, man. That's good. Pete's in. Yeah, you got it. Yeah. Mike Fouché from AlderTrack is here. The subscription news site covers all things Chicago politics. Big day today at City Council, the meeting we've all been waiting for. And a lot of it was sort of show because some of the big things were held. But
right.
Let's talk about, why don't we start with the big news that Alderman Ed Burke and others want to privatize airport security in lieu of the mess that is TSA.
You know, there's the papers are really big on this and there's a lot of talk about it, but I think that this sort of thing really is not going to go anywhere, because what essentially they're suggesting is that we're going to create a private force that will be running screening and other elements of security at O'Hare. TSA will do absolutely everything they can in order to stop that.
Yeah.
And you know, they have lots of resources.
So is it just taking political advantage, grandstanding in front of newspapers,
yes,
things like
and,
that?
Yes, and actually, in his press conference this afternoon, Mayor Emanuel said, well, I'm meeting on Friday with the director of TSA, and he had a phone call with the Secretary of Homeland Security last week.
Yeah, he loved that.
So this is really, this ordinance is perfectly timed in order to turn the screws a little bit to the director of TSA, who's going to be in town on Friday to meet with the mayor.
But I mean, but how so? Because if you're TSA or you're Homeland Security, are you really thinking that you're in danger of losing or being taken
sure.
over by a private?
I mean, if the largest airport in the United States is now no longer letting you screen passengers, you can't
can
do a job.
Do,
that
you,
means that you're going to start losing it everywhere.
Wait,
I'm just going to say, why in Chicago?
I mean, can you do that like by law? Can you replace the TSA at an airport?
Yes. There are some cases where it's done. And that's something that Burke includes in the packet that he distributed. I think they're doing some of it in Atlanta, actually. But, you know, it's a slippery slope, and I don't think TSA wants that at all. That's bad news for them.
Well, that obviously grabs the headlines. The other thing that that grabbed headlines today, and it didn't even get called, was the regulations over Airbnb. Airbnb just being one of the kind of rental companies. This is,
they call it short-term rentals.
Okay, there you go.
Is the term for it. And this has been, this whole Airbnb process has been a raging disaster in terms of how it's been managed. Nobody likes it. the ordinance that's coming out, the folks from Airbnb don't like it. Opponents of it, Alderman Michelle Smith and Alderman Tunney, who are from Lincoln Park and Lakeview, respectively, don't like it at all because there's going to be a lot of Airbnbs in those neighborhoods. And they don't like it because they feel like it's encouraging for there to be more Airbnbs in the neighborhood. There's a big problem in those communities where developments are built or houses are bought, and then they're just turned into Airbnbs.
Right. Well, I mean, you see that in more vacation spots. You think of Tahoe or like where ski towns, where every piece of property that's built, in Airbnb, it's really for renting houses.
That's exactly right.
It's surprising to know that that's something that's happening here, but I guess it is.
Well, I think in certain communities, if you feel like you're not going to be able to rent the apartment or you're not going to be able to turn it into a condo, why not make it an Airbnb? And if you have a bunch of houses on a block that are doing that, you know, it basically that turns those houses into ghost houses. You don't really have people living there. Mm-hmm. You don't get to build a community out of it. And that's the concern that they have in those neighborhoods. But the reason why this has been such a disaster is that 4 months ago is when the mayor's office first said, we're going to introduce some regulations. And then it just sat for 3 months. And then all of a sudden it had to move really fast. And in the last week, they've had change after change after change. Yesterday, they had this marathon hearing where hundreds of people showed up to testify. And then they said, okay, we're going to make some last minute changes. And apparently there was all this negotiating being done last night. And so they had an extra committee meeting this morning before council met, and the committee was supposed to vote on the ordinance, and the members of the committee say, well, where's the ordinance? We haven't actually seen any language. Mm-hmm. And so then the committee chair says, well, here's a summary. And you look at the summary, and the summary is missing the key part that had changed overnight. And so there was a lot of anger and dissatisfaction.
Is that why
among
it was
aldermen.
Held ultimately?
Yes. It was held because it was unclear. Nobody really liked what they were voting on. They felt like there needed to be more changes, and it was being very rushed. The question that was on everybody's lips, a lot of aldermen, was, why is this so rushed? Why is it moving so fast? And actually, the mayor was asked that question in the press conference after city council, and he didn't really give a good answer. He said, oh, well, we need to start regulating and do it soon. But, you know, why can't you wait another month? You know,
did he go, Mike, no,
he doesn't talk to me.
No, he doesn't. Let's bring in another alderman he probably doesn't talk to, Alderman Scott Wagesback of the 32nd Ward. Alderman Wagesback, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, man.
You bet. How you doing?
So,
hi, Mike.
How you doing?
Let me ask, let's start because we're just kind of going over the news. The one thing that I want to talk with you about is obviously what's happening with O'Hare Airport and the move that you and unions and other aldermen are taking to create an airport authority. Why is that necessary?
Well, I think the biggest issue that we were looking at goes back quite a few years in terms of wages and contracts at the airport. You know, when this last term started for some of the aldermen, one of the first things they voted on was the T5 contract, and we felt that it wasn't fully vetted. It was kind of a rush deal. And we felt we left a couple $100 million on the table that could have gone to provide better wages for a lot of Chicagoans that work out at the airport. So that was the number one thing. But as you know, a lot of people on the northwest side have been suffering through the noise issue that has gone, I think, really unaddressed in a really fashionable way. And so that came up in the issue, too, of looking at an airport authority as having a broader kind of purview of all these contracts and deals that are going on and represent people more than what we're seeing right now.
So, Alderman, one of the things that I heard about from the unions that are pushing this is that they're very concerned that contracts aren't being negotiated well and that workers are being abused. Is that one of the things that you see needs to be done? Is that one of the lead reasons?
Yeah, I mean, if you go out there and you watch some of the workers, you know, and I think there's some of them that are unionized, some of them are not. Some of them are these third-party subcontractors that these contracts are doled out to once the big ones are done, and there's no rules or
so. These really are the people pushing wheelchairs that are maybe doing some of the other work, not baggage handlers, not people working in restaurants, but pretty much all the other jobs.
And there's hundreds of them out there, if not thousands. And I think when you kind of look at the whole conglomerate of them, but there, you know, there's a huge turnover there as well. There's, and each year there can be 100 to 300% turnover on those jobs, and the wages are not that great. But, you know, we're talking about an airport system that brings 90 million passengers. It's a $45 billion a year industry, and we have some of the lowest wages, and the working conditions are not that great. And these are contracts that are just being doled out without a lot of oversight over them, and not making, not allowing for these people to get a living wage.
What do you have to do to make this happen? I mean, obviously the unions have political clout, and you have a couple aldermen, a few aldermen that are on board with something like this. But to get this through and take this power essentially away from the mayor of Chicago, how do you see that playing out?
Well, I think what we have to address a lot of issues here. One is how we start off on it, which we're looking at doing an advisory referendum to see what the people of Chicago think. And again, this is a broader issue of not just those contracts, but how the whole airport system is run. You know, you look at what's happening with the TSA right now. You look at the noise issues, the wages, and the contracts. There's much bigger issues at stake here. So we're gonna have a discussion about this, hopefully in the Aviation Committee with Alderman Zalewski, and let him kind of help us craft substantive hearings around that. Hopefully have an advisory referendum in November, and then really start a broader discussion about how we're going to do it. And, you know, Chicago's like one of the only major cities in the U.S. that doesn't have such a system set up, like a board of commissioners or an airport authority, as they do in a lot of other big cities.
Yeah, we need a port authority. We need a port authority.
A nice bunch of buses to pass out by. Alderman, I want to ask you about this $600 million general obligation bond authorization that was today. So the city approved $600 million more borrowing. And from what I saw, about $50 million of that $600 million is to pay for anticipated police settlements. And maybe about $120 million of it is to go to fees and interest to the various banks that are going to be issuing these bonds for us. What do you think of all this? Is this a good deal for the city?
Well, I think one thing I've been trying to do is talk to some of the other bondholders and see what they feel about how we're doing business here. And obviously, they have a lot of concerns. They want to see us make the pension payments. But they also want to see us do a better job of having more transparency on these kind of deals. And I know we've been having a lot of discussions. You know, we just passed our transparency ordinance around bond issuances that goes into the future. But, you know, talking to these bondholders and some of the other parties, they feel like Chicago needs to be more open about what we're doing. So, you know, I think.
So the people lending us the money think we're not doing a great job.
No, they don't. And I think, you know, that's why we're trying to get more of this out into the open. I know there was some discussion today about, you know, we haven't, you know, we're looking at settlements and judgment for police. That's a huge number every year, and that's gone down from using bond money to pay for it and trying to get it over into, you know, the corporate fund.
But we're doing it again for next year.
Yeah, and I think it's an issue that's, you know, hopefully by next year is going to be cut in half or more, because it's been a route that's been really dragging us down in terms of those bond numbers. So hopefully, you know, the plan for the future is to get away from that.
Alderman Wagenspeck, let me ask you this as we wrap up. Just in general, as we hit the summertime here in 2016, obviously, you know, the election you guys are reelected now is way in the rearview mirror. Is the city going in the right direction? Are we trending up or are we trending down?
Well, you know, I think it depends on where you are, which neighborhood you're in, and the amount of officers out there in terms of manpower. We don't know what we need out there yet. I think a lot of people would say more. For what's going to happen this summer, you know, and I think there's a lot of aldermen like citizens who are concerned about the direction the city's going. You know, the mayor just put out this new proposal for IPRA, and there were several aldermen that have been working on that with community organizations and different people for many months and looking outside for assistance from the DOJ. And, you know, there's been kind of a backwards approach to everything that's been going on over the last few months. And I think that's what people are more concerned about, that they don't feel that the mayor has taken the lead on this and showing the city the direction that we need to go.
Alderman Scott Wagesback at 32nd Ward. Alderman, thanks for joining us tonight, Scott.
You're welcome, guys. Have a great evening.
There he goes, Mike. I mean, it's good to have him. Let's, before we wrap up here, we got about 4 minutes left. The other things that we really talk about, a neighborhood opportunity program.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Alderman Riley, who was on Rokan today, kind of, he calls it a slush fund, but this is an idea that's not unlike, TIFs.
This
similar?
Was, you know, it is. I mean, the idea is that, you know, if you're going to build a building downtown, you want to make it taller, you want to make it closer to the sidewalk or, you know, various things like that. There are various bonuses and you can pay into if you want to be able to do certain things that aren't part of zoning. Hmm. And so this cash would go into a big pile of money, which some of it would go to beautify local landmarks in the downtown area. But some of it would also potentially go into other neighborhoods around the city.
It sounds great on paper, but like with TIFs, we run into the same with what Alderman Riley says. Is it just a bucket of money for the mayor to do
the
pet
concern,
projects?
The concern the Alderman have is that there's really no true oversight for the money, and the mayor can just do anything that he wants with it. And there was no vehicle set up today in order to account for it. You know, how much money is in there? You know, how do you get a project out of there? There's nothing like that.
Well, I mean, we trust the mayor, so
he does. He's very open.
No, he's open.
He likes to talk a lot.
Let's talk about the last thing that is on the docket: the new strip club rules. Now, this is something I'm having
Justin.
A hard time understanding.
Booyah.
This story. Every time I look at it, I'm like, okay, so Alderman Mitts. She
is a very devout Christian, by the way, that teaches Bible study.
She put in an ordinance that said that we are going to have a new day in Chicago where there's alcohol and all nude dancers.
Yeah.
The money, the license to be able to get that would go to charity.
Yes. No, even better is that the money made so the city would license strip clubs to be able to sell booze. And the money from that would then go to sexual assault centers across the city. And the sexual assault, the anti-sexual assault groups said, this is, no, we're not going to take money, from that in order to, then. And so there was big upset
and
about
so that.
And
so now
it gets better. So okay. Alderman Mitts was very uncomfortable with carrying this bill. I mean, you know, she was very constantly saying, I don't do these sort of things, you know, just because I'm not using these kind of businesses. I'm still chair of the license committee.
Clear, right.
And she kept referring to pasties as pastries. The dancers would wear pastries and G-strings. She was clearly uncomfortable with the whole thing.
This is how politics works. This is sort of if you want to follow how this ordinance sort of has gone, this is where it started with that sort of basic idea that it was alcohol and all nude dancers.
Yeah.
Now it's been compromised and moved, and we're essentially back to where we're at now.
Nothing. I mean, it just...
Is it dead?
I think that really what the strip clubs want is alcohol.
Right.
And they could care less about the level of nudity, honestly, because they're still going to get money. I think that will it come back again? I don't know. It stopped after the committee hearing because there was such a movement against allowing alcohol. So she just said, I'm not going to bring it up in city council. Will it come back again? I don't know. Every couple of years, this thing comes back. You know, we'll probably hear about it again.
It's almost like a card trick. Look over here.
Pastries.
Look at the shiny thing. We're going to talk about pastries.
Pastries and G-strings.
Mike Boucher from AlderTrack.com. A subscription news site that covers all things Chicago politics. Good to see you, Mike.
Good to see you.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to have some of the cast members and writers of the show Haymarket, The Anarchist Songbook, The Edge Theater. May, of course, is a big month for labor, the Haymarket Riot. This is the 130th anniversary, and it's appropriate to have this conversation we're going to have with them today, just with President Obama expanding overtime rules, changing labor laws to essentially give overtime to anyone who makes $47,000 or less. There you go. So we'll talk with the writers and performers of that play. And also coming up later, Character Flaws, which is the best in stand-up. Characters, performance, improv, sketch comedy, and we'll have some of that tonight after 10 o'clock. Well, right now, my guest tonight at the big table is Chicago author Stacey Ballas. Ballas put out a new novel called Wedding Girl. This is Stacey's ninth novel. Past books include Off the Menu, Out to Lunch, and Recipe for Disaster. If you can't tell from the titles, Stacey centers her work around foodie culture and restaurants and cooking because that's what she's into when she's not writing novels. But Stacey's work is much more than writing about food. The Wedding Girl is romantic, it's heartfelt, and it's a tale of giving up on your dreams so you can start new ones. Stacey Ballas is a Chicago writer, and before that was the director of education at the Goodman Theater, and she's my guest tonight at the big table. Stacey, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
All right, so I really like this, and the first thing I came in and I told Pete today, I said, I hope this book is optioned for a movie.
Like
it's got everything that you need for a story. So if it hasn't been optioned, my producer, Pete Zimmerman, and I be your agents.
Absolutely. I would love that. That would be great. It hasn't been optioned yet, but okay. I always say yet.
You always say yet.
I always say yet. You never know.
Well, it's amazing to me that you're able to do, and we're going to talk about that, 9 novels in the course of, what, 10 years? A little bit longer.
A little bit longer, yeah.
But this book I want to talk about because I said in the intro, it's a tale of giving up on your dreams so you can start new ones. Tell me about the character Sunshine, Sophie, Summer, Karma Bernstein.
Well, Sophie, as she prefers to be known, is a Chicago fine dining pastry chef, and she has a very specific dream for her life, which is super traditional. You find the right guy, you have the right kind of wedding, you get married, you have a very, you know, prestigious career, and that's what she's looking at, in part because she's rebelling against her very hippy-dippy, never-been-married parents. You know, everything skips a generation. So she wants that stability and that tradition, and she thinks that she's found it. She's working in a Michelin star restaurant as the pastry chef. She's engaged to the sommelier, who is a, you know, everything you could think you would want, a handsome trust fund guy. And she plans what's going to be the culinary wedding
of the year.
Well, and in part she does it because the two of them are going to open their own restaurant. So it's a combination of I have parents who have never been married. I'm going to have the most traditional, perfect wedding ever. But also, all the people that are going to come are going to be the elite culinary people, and they're going to get a sense of what it is we're going to do when we branch out and open our own space.
And this all happens in the first 5 pages.
In the first 5 pages. And she gets epically left at the altar and publicly shamed and goes into a death spiral in her career and in her life, and she ends up having to move in with her 80-some-year-old grandmother back in the old neighborhood to put her life back together.
Right, and that's really the heart and soul of this book. I mean, the beginning plays to all the sort of things we know about the culinary world and all the people that are helping her out, and it's this beautiful kind of opulent sort of wedding that she's going to put on. But the book is really about getting back to your roots. She goes to work in a bakery that's a sort of an old school bakery that she grew up with, to help the old man out, and sort of finds herself.
Exactly. Well, and I think for me, you know, I always say people are only interesting or at their most interesting when they're out of their comfort zone and when they're challenged by life. And so for her, she had a very clear picture from a very young age of this life that she thought she needed to live. And she's been very driven to get there. And when it all implodes, she has to really figure out who she is, mm-hmm. Professionally and personally and romantically. And you know, if I was dreaming, what happens if I dream the wrong dream for my whole life now? What am I left with? And I really think that's when people, they show you what they're made of. And that's what's interesting. I mean, it would be really hard to write a book where someone makes all the right decisions. It would be very short.
Right.
So,
and there's something great about sort of having the wrong decisions sort of play out for you, meaning that, you know, Dexter left her. She wasn't there. You know,
right.
She wouldn't have made that. She wouldn't have found herself.
Correct.
If it all worked out perfectly.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think that how you respond when life sends you a challenge or a failure is that tests the mettle of who you are. And I am a big believer that the universe knows what it is you need even when you don't. And sometimes you need a great big kick in the pants to get going down the right path because you've been heading down a different path. So I'm, you know, and I think that's what's interesting about people in general.
Yeah.
You know, you can say that about any of your friends, that someone gets fired and they find the career that they actually probably could have or should have been in all along, but they needed that epic moment of failure to push them in the right direction.
As a novelist, I mean, especially 9 novels through, but how much is Sophie you in this? How much, I mean, not, I, obviously with some of the sort of big character swipes, it has nothing to do with your life, obviously,
right.
but when we talk about her, you know, being a pastry chef or, you know, going back to the old neighborhood, the kind of things that connect her to Chicago, how much of you do you inject into this kind of thing?
Well, I think what you'll find is that I'm everywhere in my books and I'm nowhere specific. So the Chicago thing, I'm a fifth generation Northsider. I grew up in the city. So Chicago is always going to be another character in my books. I live to eat and cook and see how other people cook and eat. So that's always going to be another character in the books. I think anytime you hear any character in one of my books promoting something philosophical, when Sophie talks about, you know, I need to let go of a dream so I can dream a new dream, or the advice that her grandmother gives her, those are the most me. I think I just want everybody to be happy and live a good life because I try to be happy and live a good life. And if I can with my books, if I can make you laugh, if I can keep you company, but if there's little moments where you hear something that feels like actual life advice that resonates with you, mm-hmm. that's me reaching out through the page to say, I'm actually saying that to you. And sometimes it's when her friends are giving her a little tough love, and sometimes when her grandmother's doing it with, you know, adoration or with food, and sometimes it's when she reaches into her own mind and says, actually, I'm being an idiot right now, and I need to stop that.
Okay, so let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'd love to talk to you about the writing a romance novel. And it's not in the traditional sense of romance novels we know. There's no pirates. There's no flowing shirts, things
not
like
yet.
That. But how, as a novelist and as a writer, sort of developing sort of a romantic arc. And how you do that, especially when you're in 9 novels. Stacey Ballas is my guest tonight. The novel is Wedding Girl. It's out now. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Stacey Ballas. Her new novel, Wedding Girl, is out now. Just came out this month. Stacey, this is her 9th. novel. When I say this should be the kind of big table thing or interview where you're like, it's been a great career. 9 novels. I mean, it's amazing that you're able to write this, be so prolific with this kind of material, because it's difficult. I mean, I hesitate to call it a romance novel.
Right.
Because it's, and there's a category for that. The category, we'll talk about categories, but categories for everything.
There's categories for everything.
There is a skill and there is an art to writing a romantic arc.
Yes.
And you have that down. It doesn't feel trite. It doesn't feel cliche. It feels like, it feels real.
Thank you.
So talk about how you do that. I mean, there have to have been missteps in the 9 novels, but
oh, yeah.
What makes a great romantic arc?
Well, I mean, I think for me, when you're writing, you want to read about a relationship that makes sense to you. So whether that's two people that have had similar struggles separately and come together and that their struggles make them stronger as a unit, or whether it's people that have been in really bad relationships and now they're ready for a really great relationship. Those are what people, you know, people want to read aspirational stuff. So for me, I want the romantic arc of my books, and there is almost always one. While it's not at the center of the book, it's a part of how you get to know the heroine, and it's a part of how you watch her sort of reexamine her life. And the only thing that can make that interesting is if you give her something that isn't one of those cliche trite. I mean,
right.
you want to meet cute. it's just the nature of the beast. But you want to meet cute that feels realistic. So if you're reading something that's aspirational for yourself, if you're a single person, you want to believe that it's possible to meet someone in an organic way that isn't necessarily about, you know, only the options that we have now, which are fix-ups and online or at work,
right,
whatever.
Right.
Like, you want to believe that it's possible to randomly meet someone who's perfect for you.
Who comes in and tastes your new
exactly.
pastries.
Exactly.
Right.
You want to believe that the two people are making each other better. That, to me, is really key. You want to think that they're two complete people making a greater whole. I always say there's none of this, like, you need someone else to complete you. And the better you are with yourself, the more able you are to be fully present in a relationship. I think if you're going to write really good relationships, you should have been in some really bad relationships, and you should have been in at least one really great one.
Right.
Because that reminds you of what's real. I mean, I do try, as much as the books are light and they're really designed to get you through a lazy Sunday or a plane ride or while you're sitting at your kid's soccer game, I want them to feel real, and I want the people to feel real. And that means they have to be flawed. They have to be flawed, hopefully, in interesting ways that aren't overly annoying. And the romantic arc has to be believable. And you have to want them to end up together for the right reasons.
Right. You said before in the break about you don't like to write happy endings. You like to write hopeful endings. What does that mean?
Well, I think to me, a happy ending is very pat. It feels that everything's tied up in a bow. You know exactly, you know, you could put a pin in it and never go back to it ever again. I like to believe that my heroines end the books in a better place than when they started, and that the reader believes that they're going to be okay, whether the relationship that they're in is the relationship or just a relationship, they're going to come out of it fine. Whether the job that they've just accepted is the perfect job or is just the right job for right now, mm-hmm. that whatever it is, that they're on the right happy path, which to me is different than sort of a happy ending, which is everything tied up in a bow. I mean, the funniest story went, so this book started with the title, and it was not my title. And you read some of my titles. My titles have tended to be sort of double entendre
idioms. Right, right.
And my editor called me and she said, "You are going to write a book called Wedding Girl." And I said, "This is Stacy. Have you met me? Have you read anything I've ever written? I don't write the, you know, getting down the aisle has never really been the goal of any of my heroines." And she said, "No, you are going to write a book called Wedding Girl." And I said, "That's just not me, and it's not my brand, and it's not my content." And she said, "I'm going to tell you two pieces of information. Books with the word wedding in the title are selling very well right now. And books with the word girl in the title are selling very well right now."
Put a dog on the front. You got it.
And I said, "So I'm going to write a book called Wedding Girl. I wonder what that's going to be about."
Well, but that could be about a lot of different things.
It could be. And I needed for the content, you know, normally you would see a book called Wedding Girl and you would think this is a book about someone who is, you know, working towards marriage. And actually, I liked the idea of starting with a girl who was working towards that, mm-hmm. and has it completely blow up in her face. And now she has to figure out who
and,
she
I
is.
I mean, you play very well in the sort of the strength of weddings, meaning that there's a whole industry surrounding it. You sort of get into it. She opens up a website, Wedding Girl, where she takes, you know, for a fee, you can ask her questions. As opposed to getting a wedding planner, you can just ask her questions. And she's really good at, I mean, the fun part of it is she had a broken wedding, but she's really good at planning weddings.
Yeah.
And that's a great sort of, that also adds to the sort of giving up on one dream and adding to another or starting another one, which is what we talked about a little bit earlier.
Well, and it's a very human thing. I think for all of us, we have aspects of our life where we give really, really good advice to our friends and family, and we are really bad at it ourselves. Or we have friends who always give the best relationship advice or the clearest, you know, sage wisdom about how other people should live their lives, and their own lives are a mess. And so I like that dichotomy of, you know what? I'm gonna give advice on weddings for money, even though my own wedding was a complete disaster, and I ended up broke and homeless and jobless and living with my grandmother as a result.
The book is called Wedding Girl. For Sophie, I mean, this is a character that is really relatable in the sense that she has heartbreak right at the beginning, and you almost end up rooting for her because you want her to be able to prevail, to climb that or to sort of take on that challenge. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to walk away from a character like that? I mean, when you're done with Wedding Girl, you're like, oh, I want her to continue climbing. I mean, especially since you're not wrapping it up and you're doing hopeful endings.
Right. Yeah. I want all of my characters to continue. I always joke that every single character in every one of my books had a very complete backstory and back life. It bothers me when I read books and I find that the secondary and tertiary characters are thinly drawn. So while you may only see the other characters in the book here and there, I can tell you where they went to college. I can tell you about their first failed romance. I know everything about them as real people. So I could either write a book for any character in any one of my books, mm-hmm. or I could continue any one of my heroines' stories ad infinitum. And in fact, I have always done notes and had thoughts about sequels, anywhere from 1 to 4 sequels for any of my books. But you have to sell a lot of books for your publisher to want you to write sequels. And so the only thing that I do is my books are all one-offs. You can read them in any order. But if you read them in chronological order, every book has a tiny little nod to the heroine in the previous book. Okay. So you didn't read the previous book, which is Recipe for Disaster. But when she talks about Annika, who was her architect.
Yeah, right.
Annika was the heroine of Recipe for Disaster. Okay, so you get a tiny little wink and a window into where they are now a year later.
It's also a great way to develop a loyal following for people to be able to continue to follow your work. I mean, for this character, there's so much more involved. We'll talk about it after the news here. With Chicago, mm-hmm. and it takes place here in Chicago, with the food scene. There's so much inside. It's interesting to me because it's just blown up the culinary industry in this town, and it sort of plays a character in your book. There's so much more. Stacey Ballas is the author of Wedding Girl. It's her 9th novel. You can get it now. It just came out this May. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download after the news. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman here till 11 o'clock. My guest tonight at the big table, Stacey Ballas, her new novel, Wedding Girl, just came out this month to coincide with your anniversary.
Yes,
your
it did.
5-year anniversary.
5-year anniversary.
Let's talk about another character in this novel, Chicago.
Yeah.
Plays a big part, not just obviously what we mentioned, the sort of clamor over the restaurant scene and the sort of what we know to be the culinary industry, but about location. I mean, this kind of takes place in old Chicago.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I know this, we're Chicagoans. Chicago is a city of neighborhoods, and each neighborhood has its own flavor and its own personality, and it's one of the things that's so great about this city, and something that I've always appreciated growing up here. So Chicago is another character in all of my books. It's really important to me to highlight and celebrate everything that this city is about, not just from the food scene, but from a people scene and cultural. And for this book, it was really kind of important for her to go back to that kind of old school neighborhood place that has nostalgia but has a comfort and a safety.
Well, she's in a world, a pastry chef world, where she's working at Michelin star restaurants. It's a different kind of Chicago.
Right.
And when she has to go back and live with her grandmother, she gets a part-time job at Langer's, which is the bakery.
Exactly.
It's
the local neighborhood bakery.
It's the local bakery. It's everything. I mean, it's Dinkles. It's Lutz's. It's
exactly.
It's the Chicago bakery.
It's the Chicago, probably Jewish bakery.
Right.
That's right. And to me, that's that thing of you kind of have to go back to the beginning, right? She's had all this stuff in her life that's completely exploded, her life, her job, her relationship. And you got to get back to brass tacks when that happens. You got to go where you're comfortable and where you're safe and start from a strong foundation. And I think, you know, Chicago neighborhoods have always been about family and community.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I grew up. That's how my parents grew up. That's how my grandparents grew up. That's how my great-grandparents grew up. And so to highlight and celebrate that, I think it's really different here than it is almost anywhere else. And that it's not just cultural and it's not just socioeconomic, that it really is about a flavor of a neighborhood and how that neighborhood community, I mean, we have such strong community activism within the communities. Like, you go to any neighborhood in Chicago, there's a little newsletter, and there's a little preservation society, and there's its own little chamber of commerce, and there's all that stuff that's just for that neighborhood, and the neighborhood could be really small. And so I think celebrating that aspect of Chicago, because it's not the aspect that you see in movies or on TV or usually celebrated in books.
Or it's hard. It's very hard to capture. I mean, that spirit, you know, because it, because, you know, an old bakery looks like an old bakery. It could be look like it's on a set in a Hollywood film. But there's something about the character that Chicago is in this book that really relates. And that's I think, the when you talk about the grandmother's Bubbles, her building.
Yeah,
that's the big part of, like, that's a big part
of the house she grew up in.
Right.
Right.
So I mean, do you have, when you write like that, do you have a building in mind? Do you know exactly where that is in Chicago?
I do. And let me be clear. I'm a really lazy writer. I mean, you've read the book. My books take place right now in the city in which I live, usually either in the neighborhood where I live now or a neighborhood I've lived in before. Sometimes they live in my house. They go to the restaurants I eat at. They shop at the stores that I shop at. I mean, I really am not interested in spending a whole lot of time doing research, because that takes a lot of time.
But there's some authenticity in that.
But
I mean,
you know, they say write what you know. I really write what I know. And so when I talk about Bubbles and her old neighborhood, I know where that is. And when we talk about, oh, driving by and going to see Bubbles' house where she grew up, I'm thinking about the house where my grandmother grew up. I've got images in my head where my dad grew up. Like, I know where all those places are. And so I just am trying to capture them in a way that someone who's never been here starts to get a sense of how the neighborhoods work. That, to me, is sort of – it's the interesting part of Chicago that you don't often get
to see. Is it hard to write that knowing that someone who's not from here is going to read it? Meaning, I mean, is it hard to explain – to sort of capture that magic that is a Chicago neighborhood?
I have to find a balance of not over-explaining and just hoping that someone who's in New York that is reading this is going, oh, that sounds like when I used to go visit my grandmother in Queens. Or, you know, someone who's in Boston is going, oh, that's kind of like when I used to go visit my aunt and uncle who lived, you know, out in Brookline or whatever it is. Like, someone who's going to figure out that nostalgia piece and relate it to something for themselves. And, you know, I try to write as much as possible in a way that someone who's from here gets it as being totally authentic and real. And someone who's not from here understands that Chicago is an interesting place and you should come hang out.
Stacey Ballas, the book is Wedding Girl. Stacey, who's reading this book? That's what I want to know. I mean, because I loved it, and I felt like I was kind of one of the reasons maybe I loved it was because I was peeking in on it. Like maybe it was something I wasn't ever going
to
see. And then I saw it and I was like, why am I choking up? What's Mark doing? I was like, so who is reading?
Well, you know, look, there's no question that probably 85% of my demographic are women from, and I do get a pretty broad range. I mean, I do get women in their sort of mid-20s through their 60s and 70s. I write contemporary women's fiction, or what they're calling me now, foodie fiction. So I write contemporary women's fiction where food and eating and cooking is another character in the book.
So foodie fiction is a thing? Like, that's a...
Foodie fiction is a thing.
You're a pioneer.
That is an official genre. I don't think I'm a pioneer. I think MFK Fisher and Julia Child and some other people were pioneers, but I'm happy to be in the mold for the moment. But yeah, so most of my readers are women. I have a small group of gay men who also appreciate and love what I write. But I have this tiny little core, like maybe 2-3% of normal, everyday straight guys who like my work. And I always say...
Present.
Thank you. And I always say they usually come to my work because their wife or their girlfriend or someone left it in a bathroom. But what they figure out quickly is that, number one, I write funny, which is universal. And number two, the straight guys that read me go, I never realized that if I really want to know about women and how they think and what they want and how they engage in relationships and what they're looking for in a guy, I should read this kind of stuff because it's like peeking behind the curtain.
Do you feel like that's part of what you write? I mean, is sort of an inside glimpse into what women want?
I think I write an, I try to write an inside glimpse, and not so much into what women want, but actually who they are. I think one of the things about writing first person narrative is that you are seeing this character through her own filter. She is telling you who she is, and you're getting to know her very intimately. And that, that's important to me. And it's one of the reasons that even though I write very lighthearted, funny books, there's other messages that are woven in that I don't think necessarily come through in other books like mine. I write a lot about size positivity and women who are very normal average size for women in this country, which is size 14 or larger. And they are not spending an entire book wondering about the size of their butt or whether they look good in these pants. And they don't ever think that any lack of success in life or in relationships has anything to do with their weight. Their weight is a non-issue for them. They just happen to be bigger girls. And that, to me, is a really important thing to put out there. So trying to get those little glimpses behind the curtain into how women really think and how they think about themselves and what they worry about and what really gives them anxiety, which I think is often glossed over in other works of fiction. I think that's fascinating to guys in the same way that I like to read Nick Hornby, because I get that same little peek, you know, behind the curtain with his male characters.
Stacey Ballas is my guest tonight at the big table. She wrote the new novel, Wedding Girl, which just came out this May. When we return, let's talk about the how you write. Because I'm as fascinated to the fact that you have nine novels since, what, 2004?
2004, first one came out.
That's amazing. All right, Stacey Ballas is my guest tonight at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Stacey Ballas. The novel is Wedding Girl, just out this month. Stacey, nine novels in, I guess, 12 years now.
Yeah.
What's your process? I mean, are you pretty much, do you have a routine to be able to crank out that kind of material in such a short amount of time?
Sort of depends on what you think of as a routine. If by routine, do you mean, do I spend the first month after I sign the contract, like patting myself on the back and say, ooh, I have a book deal. And then I write a couple chapters in a panic. And then I spend another month patting myself on the back for writing first two chapters. And then I settle into kind of, I'll block off, so stupid. I block off time on my calendar. I have to write in big chunks. I can't, like, I know a lot of writers, they write 1,000 words a day. I have to write a chapter in sort of one big fell swoop. So I need a 4 to 5 hour chunk of time uninterrupted to sit and kind of get it out, almost stream of consciousness, and then I can go back and edit it.
Does it build up? Like, do you start to, like, oh, that would be great for this character. Oh, I'll write this down, and then you sort of, like, spill it out when you get in front
of the computer. I think I do. A lot of that just happens in my head, and then I sit down always reluctantly at the computer. I'll block off chunks of time, like maybe 3 or 4 days during the week. And if I write on one or two of them, I have been very successful because I will figure out, I do a lot of what I call procrastibaking. If I'm bringing you cookies, then I am definitely under deadline. I suddenly have a desperate need to make social plans with everybody that I haven't seen in a while. So then there's lunch engagement and that breaks up the day. And now I don't possibly have enough time. And then I write. So I write about half the book like that. And then I get to where I'm at right now. So my next book is due August 1st. And I've written about a third of it.
Okay.
And so now in the next 10 weeks, I have to, like, panic and get the rest of the book.
How long does it take to write a book for you?
It usually takes me a total of around 9 months. So I write a book a year. It takes me about 9 months of sort of active working on the book, writing something. There's chunks of time when the book is out of my hands for editing and that kind of thing. So I'm not being active. I'm just thinking about it. But it takes about 9 months to get a draft done. And then it goes through a very long edit process. So the book that's for me that's due August 1st will be out the beginning of next May. And it will take from August 1st till the following May to get it edited and copy edited and
Now, Stacey, I mean, there are authors out there, that, and we've had them on the show, where they will publish independently or they'll self-publish in some form. I mean, this is, I mean, you are in the system. I mean, you get Penguin to publish your stuff. Was this a subsidiary kind of thing?
Yeah, Berkeley? The Berkeley Group is an imprint under Penguin Random
right.
House.
So, I mean, you must have seen the industry change in the last dozen years of being a writer and being and publishing work, nine novels. It's drastically changing.
My first two books, which are currently out of print, were never made available digitally. You can't get them for Kindle because it didn't exist when I published them. So the way people publish and the way that people read has changed enormously just in the time that I've been doing it. And I think some for the good and some not. I think the ability now for people to publish independently and to self-publish is extraordinary. And that you can really take it seriously and be taken seriously is unbelievable. When I first started, everything that was self-publishing was referred to within the industry as vanity press. And if you published your own material, no major publishing house would ever look at you ever again for anything in the future. And that's really changed. And a lot of artists are taking control of their own work. The ones who are being successful are giving it the same kind of attention that the big publishing houses do. So they are hiring independent editors, independent copy editors.
That's really that's the strength of having a publisher. When it comes with an editor, it comes with all the kind of things that you need to support you as a writer.
The book, for me, doesn't happen until the edits. I mean, I know what I meant when I wrote the first draft, but it doesn't hang together as a real story. And things change significantly during the editing process because I'm too close to my own work to know what it needs to be to get into a stranger's hands and have them respond to it. So I always think of my editor as my partner in this. We are making the book together. And then the copy editor goes through and finds all the stupid spelling mistakes and the bad grammar, because for someone who was an English teacher, I'm really terrible at all of that. And the art department figures out the cover, and the marketing department figures out how to get it into the right hands, and my publicist figures out how to send you a copy of the book
right. So
we can be here to talk about it. That is all stuff that can be done by someone on their own that I have no interest in.
For you, I mean, obviously, you're a full-time writer to be able to do this. You know, the golden question is, are you making a living as a writer? I mean, to be able to publish in this way with such support, and this is major publishing, Penguin, everything about it is, you know, like you said, you have all this sort of support. I mean, is there a living to be made in publishing novels?
There is the same living to be made publishing novels as there is in being a full-time theater actor in Chicago or a working musician. There is a tiny, tiny percentage of people who will take that artistry and make all the money.
Right.
But yes, it is possible to support yourself as long as you are not interested in a particularly lavish lifestyle. And I did, you know, I published my first four books while I was working full-time. And working a big job and 60, 70 hours a week. And it wasn't until I got to a place where I realized I was never going to know what I could be as a writer unless I did it full time and I was in a position to leave. But even then, it was because my overhead was very low. And I took an enormous pay cut in order to do this full time. And I'm incredibly blessed in that I'm in a marriage and in a dual income household where the person I'm married to is not a working artist. He's a civilian. Yeah. And so things like health insurance are luckily provided for
me. I just, you know, because I automatically, and I don't know what this is about our society, that I automatically, and I have a ton of friends like this too, artists who are theater, like you mentioned, or people who are on television even, or people who write books, where, you know, to be able to write nine novels, I'm like, man, why don't you ever invite me over to your mansion? Why does Stacey ever invite me to her cool pool?
Why don't I send you my plane to pick you up? Yeah,
Stacey's got a plane.
Right.
Like, it's just, I don't know if something in our society that makes us think because you are accomplished, because you're prolific, because you get great reviews, that you should be making more money than all of us.
Yeah, there is that presumption. And I will tell you, in the same way that you will go to see a play and you see somebody starring in the play at Goodman Theater and you think, oh, they've really made it. They're probably also teaching. They may work a day job when they're in between gigs, and they're worried constantly about getting enough weeks for insurance. And it's the same. I know very few full-time writers who are able to support themselves entirely without either a spouse or a partner, that they're in a dual income situation, or without doing things. I mean, I know plenty of people, they'll have roommates, they do freelance work, they teach, you do all this other stuff. Until I got remarried, I did a ton of freelance. I was writing copy for other people's websites. I was writing, you know, I wrote some guy's father of the bride toast for his daughter's wedding for money. Like, I would write anything for money. And I was very fortunate that when we got married, my husband said to me, you know, this is what you do. And every minute that you spend hustling other freelance work to try to bring income in, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that's not going to make you a better novelist. To write these other people's website copy is not going to make you a better novelist. So just focus on that and I'll cover health insurance. And I went, okay, that seems like a good plan.
Last question for you. I'm interested in what's next, because you mentioned, you know, you got a book due on August 1st. Do you see yourself writing in this genre, in this sort of foodie fiction drama or genre for the near future, the long term? Like, do you see yourself branching out? What's next for Stacey Bowles?
Well, the book that I'm working on right now is foodie fiction once again. And I certainly think that there's still more to say in the genre. It's just now starting to really kind of explode. There's some other books, and there's some books that are getting big attention, and movies like Chef and The 100-Foot Journey. Like, food is really in a great place right now. So I can certainly see myself continuing this for the foreseeable future. There's other stuff that interests me. But the great thing about writing is that I can do that simultaneously. So I have a thriller project that I'm excited about and interesting with and kind of dabbling with. I've got a young adult piece that I'm talking to a friend that we may do together. I've always wanted to do some nonfiction sort of humor, memoir, essay kind of stuff. The thing you have to be careful about is you spend all of this time and energy and effort, as does your publisher, building an audience that trusts you. And so you have to be careful about going too far off brand or off genre, because they won't necessarily take that journey with you. So I'd like to do all kinds of stuff. I wrote a cookbook. I'd like to do another one, because obviously that's...
Well, we look forward to it. You got a fan here. I will follow you into whatever genre you go.
Thank you.
Stacey Bowles is the author of The Wedding Girl, a novel which is just out this month on Berkeley Press. This is her ninth novel, and she's got another one that's due on August 1st, but we ain't going to see it till next year.
You're not going to see it till next May.
Stacey, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Dustin.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up this hour, we're going to talk with Claire McDermott from the Active Transit Alliance. Talk about whether or not Chicago can be the next Copenhagen when it comes to cycling. Obviously, we've seen a lot with protected bike lanes, and we've seen a lot with more transit options available for people who ride to work or bike all over the place. They're the people behind the Bike to Drive, which is coming up at the end of the month. So we'll talk with Claire McDermott about what it takes to make Chicago a world-class biking city. That's coming up after 9:30. But right now, it's May in Chicago, and that means it's a perfect time to talk labor history, especially this May, as it's the 130th anniversary of the famed Haymarket Riot, a massive protest turned bloody when a bomb was thrown into the crowd, killing police officers and protesters. The subsequent trial focused on the anarchists who organized the protest, and they were sort of given a sham trial and hung for their actions. To this day, historians still question where the bomb came from and who actually threw it. A new show at the Edge Theater in Edgewater puts the story to stage and music. It's called Haymarket, the Anarchist Songbook. Got a great review from Chris Jones in the Chicago Tribune. It runs through June 12th, and actors and writers are here in studio. Alex Higginhauser, he wrote the book and lyrics. He's here. Alex, good to see you.
Good to see you as well. This is great. Thanks for having us.
Let me introduce some people from the cast. Roy and Kent, Mike Mazzacca, and James Smart. Guys, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And we're going to hear some live music in just a second. Alex, what drew you to write a story about the Haymarket riots?
You know, we've been, my writing team and I, and actually David's here tonight. He's the composer of the show. We've been working together for a few years, and we were looking at the idea of riots and where they come from, and we had this kind of weird idea of putting a show, taking a show and putting it together about all riots through time. And it turns out that was way too much to take on.
That's a lot of riots.
Yeah, you know, actually, there's been like more than five. So, but in the process of the research, we ran across Haymarket. And first of all, and the whole thing lasted about 5 minutes, which is, you know, a lot different from your average riot. But it's one of those stories that the more you dig in, the more there is to discover. And there's this image of what Haymarket is. And I think most people in Chicago have heard about it. You know, they know about Haymarket Brew Pub and all that. But they don't know the full story or the people who are behind it.
Well, I mean, Alex, you're not from Chicago. What did you know about Haymarket before you started getting into this?
Almost nothing at all. You know, kind of a lefty, so I got a little bit of that going on. But otherwise, like, really nothing. And the process, it was like 3 years of research that went into writing the show, and it was 2 years before we even put pen to paper.
Well, it's a tremendous story, and it says a lot about, I mean, today we're talking about this, the Haymarket riots and 130th anniversary, but, you know, today is President Obama came out today and you know, is going to force overtime pay for people working 40 hours. But this was really about the 8-hour work week or work day and a sort of a protest that was organized because a lot of the corporations in Chicago at the time weren't giving us anything more than I mean, they were making us work all the time.
Yeah. And the thing they were going for then was even, you know, incremental change. They're trying to get 8 hours work for 10 hours wages. And the hope was that would keep going. You know, there was this movement that has totally died in America, but it was a continual reduction, not just sticking with 8 hours, but it's like, all right, 8 hours. And then when we get used to that, let's ratchet that down to 6. And then we ratchet that down to 4. And then it eventually goes away, and we have this kind of workers' paradise. And that's a very simplified version of it.
Let me ask you, why put this to song? I mean, there's obviously the labor movement has tremendous, you know, great folk songs that have been a part of Bucky Hawker here in town. People do sort of labor music. But why not just tell the story of the Haymarket riot? Why create a songbook around this?
Well, in this case, it's kind of punny, but we're giving the actors the means of musical production by letting them hang on to the instruments. But there was a hugely rich history of music in the labor movement. And you'll actually, in the song Glory coming up, hear a little snippet of the 8-hour song, which was sung at the actual parade on May 1st, 1886.
All right. Well, let's do that. Roy and Kent, Mike Mazzocca, and James Smart are in studio. They've got we got an acoustic guitar. We got an awesome-looking bass. And a mandolin. All right. Let's hear this song, Glory. This is from the show, Haymarket Anarchist Songbook, which is at the Edge Theater in Edgewater through June 12th. Guys, take it away.
How do you build a city of dreams? One brick at a time from scaffolds and beams. But how can you live in a city of gold when you're hoping for copper and do as you're told? Working for wages, we're selling our time. The boss makes a dollar, we don't get a dime. So put down your hammers and sickles and saws. Pick up a banner, take up a cause. Let's take a walk past the gas lights on Grand. We built these streets so we know where we stand. Turn around, look on back when we get to the pier, and look at all the glory.
Zu sammen gemeinsam wir sieben und ihre Gewinner von Erde zu nehmen. Wir haben kein Geld, wir haben kein Land, aber arbeiten wir nicht um zu haben
bestand. Shoulder to shoulder, the biggest strike yet. Let's give them a show that they'll never forget. We're absent for duty, won't come back until 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. 8 hours for work,
8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. Hold your signs higher, stand proud and true. Lift up your voice till they hear you on Michigan Avenue. Look at the fat cats, they're quaking with fear. Show them all the glory.
Different tongues and different trades, our hearts all beat alike. Our backs may bend from working, but they won't break our strike. Together we are dynamite, they're right to be afraid. But we're not here to fight them, no. We're gonna have a parade. We're gonna have a parade.
We're gonna have a parade.
We're gonna have a parade.
We're gonna have a parade.
We're gonna have a parade.
8 hours for work. 8 hours for rest. 8 hours for what we will. 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will.
No men in the factories, no smoke from the stacks. Blue skies above us, the wind at our backs. No black from the bellows, the air is clear. Look at all the glory here.
Yeah. That's a performance. There we go. That's Ryan Kent, Mike Mazzocca, and James Smart. They are all in the show at the Edge Theater in Edgewater. It's called Haymarket, the Anarchist Songbook. It's got a great review from the Tribune. It's running through June 12th. We'll be right back. We'll take a break so we can get another song in before we're done here. Alex Higginhauser is also here. He wrote the book and lyrics, and we'll continue the conversation here on The Download. When we return, stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, very excited to have these guys. What a great song. Ryan Kent, Mike Mazzocca, and James Smart. They're part of the show that is right now at the Edge Theater in Edgewater. It's called Haymarket, the Anarchist Songbook. It got a great review from the Chicago Tribune. Runs through June 12th. Alex Higginhauser wrote the book and lyrics. He's with me now. The one thing that Chris Jones brought up was, he's like, is it a musical or is it just a sort of a collection of songs?
You know, it's called the Anarchist Songbook as a play on the Anarchist Cookbook, that like famed like thing for bombs and all that back in the day. But it was a full-fledged musical, story and all.
There you go. You seem very pointed about that. That's good. Alex, okay, so we heard that last song was really about the May Day Parade. And we continue to see the May Day Parade in different forms. A lot of it now is focused on immigration and making sure we have equal wages and fair pay. But the first song was about the May Day Parade.
It was, and it was the first May Day Parade that started, that spawned all of them going forward. You know, it's what made it about labor. It's what made it about individual rights and equal justice. And, you know, there's a tendency to treat it as a chance to walk around the Maypole in the U.S., where everywhere else in the world, this tradition does live on. And these are the guys that started it.
The song we're going to hear next, Lady Dynamite. Mm-hmm. What is the song?
The song is sung by the character Lewis Ling, who is the most, I'd say, bomb happy of all the folks who were executed in the Haymarket trial. He did not throw the bomb that was involved in the incident, and all signs point to him never having actually done anything violent. But he was really into the idea that if one man carries one of these, you know, one stick of dynamite.
And that's really, then, I mean, it was all ideas.
That
the Haymarket, the sort of anarchists that were on stay or were on trial were tried for. It was the ideas that they were interested in, not actually what happened at that riot.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a terrifying story.
Yeah, they said it was anarchy on trial and not these men. They turned it to a conspiracy to commit murder, which just meant they had to prove that these men were anarchists, and then they started an organization. And if they were able to successfully prove that, then this kind of kangaroo court could convict them and execute them for whatever they wanted.
All right, so let's hear some one more song before we wrap up here. Like I said, Roy and Kent, Mike Mazzocco, and James Smart. Also, we have the accordion instead of the mandolin on this one. So let's hear Lady Dynamite.
There's this woman I know in the city. She's elegant, she's bright. She's charming and regal and perfectly legal. But look how she lights up the night. There's this woman I know in Chicago, a product of dire circumstances. Whisper her name, but don't dare strike a flame till you're ready to see how she dances. Dance with me, Lady Dynamite. Be my partner in crime, be my pride. Men can stick you and stone you, but they'll never own you when you're dancing with her at your side. Stick you and stone you, but they'll never own you with dynamite right at your side. Faster. I'll be frank with you, boys, she's easy. But to you, sir, you've got to be hard. 10 minutes of prep, just learn a few steps and your name's on her dancing card. First thing you need is the body. Concealable, steely, and slight. Fill with nitro and sawdust, it's all within the law. Just be sure that you pack it in tight. Don't worry, my friends, she's stable. My paramour, my muse. She's ready for the road. All she needs to explode is a blasting cap or a fuse. Dance with me, Lady Dynamite. I only have eyes for you. One day I'll ignite you so we can invite you to a Pinkerton barbecue. Dance with me, Lady Dynamite. Bring your cousin, Lady Liberty. We'll gleam and we'll glister. They'll burn and they'll blister until your blind sister, Lady Justice, learns how to see. See us dance faster, damn you! Dance with me, Lady Dynamite. Say goodbye to the world that we know. Tell the bosses we've got 'em. We're no longer on the bottom as soon as I give you a throw. Dance with me, Lady Dynamite. See them crumble, see them fall. No one can harm me when one man's an army. We'll have anarchy once and for all. No one can harm me when one man's an army. Anarchy once and for all.
Wow, yeah. Give him a little bit. There you go. Give him a little street level. There you go. Look at that. You've got a crowd out here now. Wow. Roy and Kent, Mike Mazzocco, James Smart performing that song, Lady Dynamite, and before that, Glory. Here on the download. The show is called Haymarket, an anarchist songbook. It's up at the Edge Theater in Edgewater. It's running through June 12th. Alex Higginhauser did books and lyrics. Alex, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, bringing everybody, and good luck with the show.
Thanks so much. Great to see you again.
All right. That was great. Wow, Pete, how do you like that? There's so much good stuff on the show this week. You know, like all the different shows and the musicians, I feel like every time they leave the studio, I'm like, I'm going to that tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, that's right. We got the show.
I know.
But I have stacked up. I mean, last night with the House Theater, the Death and Harry Houdini, and then this show now. I mean, I'm stacked up with Cinderella and the Joffrey Ballet. Like, I feel like I'm stacked up. Like, I'm going to, every waking hour that I have free, I am just going to see theater.
What do you think if you, me, and Pete, we just all called out sick tomorrow?
I was saving that for the softball season. You know, we're like, oh, I'm sick, and then show up to the actual softball game.
I'd rather go see the guys that were just in the studio. That was great.
Wasn't it?
I mean,
how great was that? They're so good.
What about me, Rob, and you know, you, Justin? What about a weekend, man?
Yeah,
we could do that.
Yeah,
let's get together.
Yeah, that sounds really great to hang out with you guys. No, I would. I, well,
he's dripping with enthusiasm, isn't
so
he, Pete?
Much enthusiasm.
All right, fine. Pete and I will go out.
All right. Yeah. I think that's a good idea. We should go. I'd love to see that Edge Theater too, up in Edgewater. So, all right, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out our scheduling. We could do a whole outing, like a download outing. That could be fun. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Claire McDermott. I'm very excited to talk to her about Bike the Drive, which is coming up here. I'm going to be. Did I tell you this? I'm going to be the MC at Bike the Drive.
What?
Yep. What Me and it, Andre Darlis.
What are you guys? What are you doing?
I'm on the stage, being like, "Come on, ride harder." I don't know. I don't.
Watch
know.
Out, Darlis will elbow you.
She will.
You.
That's exciting. We should have. Let's get her on too. Yeah. Let's get Andre on, and we can talk about.
I truly believe that the idea of Bike to Drive, where they shut down Lakeshore Drive so you can ride your bike on the Lakeshore Drive, is one of the coolest things the city does. Primarily a driver, I think it's cool. Mostly because they do it like Sunday morning and I'm not out.
You have to be out by 10.
Yeah, right.
But you know what? I feel bad for all the mommies in Wilmette and Winnetka that can't jump into their Mercedes SUVs and get downtown. It's tough.
They got to take the Kennedy.
Yeah, they've got to go on the Edens.
They got the Edens.
Oh, man.
Right.
That's
feel
tough.
Bad. You're right. I should have a little bit more respect for the
I just
Sunday
got the
morning
Beamer, washed.
Beamer crowd. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up, Memorial Day weekend, the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, is one of the coolest events this city puts on. It's the MB Bike the Drive. Essentially, you get to do what you've always wanted to do, which is get on your bike and cruise Lakeshore Drive. How cool is that? Proceeds benefit the Active Transportation Alliance. This is a not-for-profit organization that is really advocating for better infrastructure for those who walk, bike, or use public transit. Claire McDermott is with Active Trans. She joins me now. Claire, good to see you.
Good to see you, Justin.
All right, so let's talk about this. This is the 15th year of Bike to Drive. Where does it originate? What's the origin story of Bike to Drive?
Sure. So MB Bike the Drive started 15 years ago. It actually was an event originally of Active Transportation Alliance called Boulevard Lakefront Tour. So that was sort of the first event that started it all for us. And we went on a little part of Lakeshore Drive during that ride, and people just lost it and were like, "This is amazing."
Like the bikers and the drivers were like, "What do you mean this is closed?"
Right.
Who did this?
Right. And that was really the start of it. And you know, from there on out, now we've got in total 15-mile stretch of Lakeshore Drive that we shut down to car traffic and usually have about 20,000 riders out.
20,000 riders. Okay, so mm-hmm. So just give me an idea of this. I will be down there, which is awesome. I'm very excited to be a part of it. Okay, so the idea is it starts downtown like Grant Park, like Jackson. And how does it work? I mean, do you just essentially bring your bike down there and cruise wherever you want to go?
People can ride as little or as much of the 15-mile stretch as they want. So if you do the entire loop, you're looking at 30 miles.
Wow.
But again, you could do as little as, you know, a mile or 2 miles or whatever you're comfortable
with. Or half a mile or a quarter mile or just, you know, a couple lengths. for those who don't ride like myself, a couple turns on the bike, yeah.
We recommend registering in advance at mbbikethedrive.org. And
you have to be registered. This isn't the kind of thing where I'm like, you know what? It's such a nice day. I'm going to go down to Montrose and get on the drive.
You do have to be registered.
It's like a marathon.
It's like a marathon. We have checkpoints. So we do, you know, make sure that people are actually signed up. Basically you sign up in advance. You can also sign up the day of, though. We definitely welcome walk-ups. And the event really starts at the best time. You don't want to start your ride any later than about 7 a.m. But it's beautiful. You know, you see the sunrise, you hear the birds chirping, you hear the waves lapping. It's a really, really beautiful, picturesque morning.
This is great for the city, and obviously it's one of the most bike-friendly events that the city, you know, is involved in here. It's also going to be Bike to Drive Day now. Mayor Rahm Emanuel proclaimed it to be MB Bike to Drive Day in Chicago. Talk about, you know, this kind of event, because there's always been a movement, been a night ride. There's always, what's the mass bike?
Critical Mass.
Critical Mass, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But there always has been this organized movement to show Chicago's strength in numbers, to show how many bike riders are actually in the city. This mm-hmm. takes it a step further. This is taking it to the point of, like I said, marathon status.
Definitely. It's a massive event, and it's rated within the top 2 bike events in the country. So it's, a really amazing event. And, you know, we're just so excited to see it's grown so much like this. I think that when we were first getting started as an organization 30 years ago, you know, people couldn't imagine seeing, you know, riding a bike on the street, and it was really unheard of. Mm-hmm. So now at this point, to see people feeling so comfortable out there and just getting on the roads, and, you know, obviously with Divvy in place now, you know, you see people just everywhere on bikes. So it's really amazing to see, and we're glad that we have Bike the Drive as such a keystone event in Chicago to sort of showcase that.
The Active Transportation Alliance has been involved in a lot of these initiatives, some of the stuff you just talked about. But, I mean, everything from the flyover that's happening at Lakeshore Drive and Navy Pier to just a move for more protected bike lanes in the city of Chicago. Active Trans has been a part of this. When you talk about infrastructure and where we're at as a biking city, and we've heard the mayor talk about wanting to be much more bike-friendly, where are we at? I mean, you've seen, I think of downtown, like on Dearborn, when you see that, you're like, there are now lights for bikes, you know, like, and all
yes.
this kind of stuff. And even the protected bike lanes that are going in and out of on Kinsey, we're moving at pretty big strides.
Definitely. One of the things we've been saying around the office lately is that the conversation used to be, should we put in these bike protected lanes? You know, should we put in, you know, more trail separation down at the lakefront? And the conversation's really shifted now to not should we, but how can we, or how fast can we, or where can we? You know, so for us, that's really exciting. It definitely shows a really great stride forward in the conversation.
Can you envision a time when Chicago would be something like a European city, like an Amsterdam, where the preferred method of travel is by bike?
Well, you know, we definitely hope that we can get to a, you know, Copenhagen level. I mean,
right.
I've been there, and it was amazing to see how organized everyone follows the rules. And, you know, there's definitely, you know, there's still a lot to be done in the arena, obviously. But yeah, I think, you know, Chicago stays on it, we can get there.
One of the intimidating things about Chicago, obviously, is traffic. I mean, there is so much here, car traffic, that it does make it difficult for novice riders to consider even biking to work or using bicycling as their mode of transportation. Just because, you know, sharing the road in some cases where there aren't protected bike lanes is sometimes hazardous for those. I mean, especially with the buses and everything. But we're moving in strides. I think of one of the things that always stopped me from riding to work was the Lakeshore Drive path. And you would think that at that point, that would make me want to ride my bike because that's protected. But man, that is chaotic. I mean, in the way that bikes and joggers and walkers and everybody's intersect, it feels like you're 2 seconds away from an accident every time. But you guys have actually taken that on.
Yes, we are so excited. We've been working with our partners and local government and legislation to try and get trail separation down on the lakefront path. And we were so excited. 2 weeks ago, the mayor announced that he's behind this plan to do a piece of the lakefront trail. Now is a trail separated, you know, sort of testing ground and area. Mm. So I think that's going to be huge. So you'll have a lane for, you know, cyclists. You'll have a lane for walkers and joggers, again, to mitigate some of those potential crash situations.
And then a lane for extreme cyclists, the ones that like the ones who dress, who have the spandex on, and on the left, like that kind of thing, you'll have a lane for them too, so they can stay out of my way?
We'll hope so.
We're talking with Claire McDermott here. She's with the Active Transportation Alliance. The last question I really have is, I mean, we kind of covered what we haven't really talked about the suburbs. It's not just about, you know, urban cycling and using bikes as transportation in a city like Chicago, but the suburbs, you're also reaching out, not necessarily on boulevards and streets and avenues like here in Chicago, but with trails and paths and other things that sometimes aren't really thought out.
Definitely. So in the suburbs, you know, a lot of times people will be out on their bike traveling, and all of a sudden the path or the trail that they're on will just end. So part of our initiative work out in the suburbs and with some of our community partners out there is to get trail connectivity so that people can get to their jobs, they can get to, you know, the stores in safe ways that make it convenient to ride a bike as opposed to, you know, other forms of, you know, maybe car travel. So
Right. That's
definitely a big initiative of ours for this upcoming year.
I don't know what I would do if I came on a path and it came to an end. You didn't know what to do. What do you do? Do you go off-road at that point? Do you turn around? What do you do?
It's rough, right?
What do you say? What's the advice of Active Trans?
Well, use caution, obviously, as you merge into traffic. Look over your shoulder. Always signal. But yeah, you know, part of it is that we really want people to feel comfortable and provide that infrastructure that's needed so that people can really get out there and ride safely and ride comfortably and to keep it up, you know, not just try it once and say, oh, that was, you know, a bad experience.
MB Bike to Drive is coming up the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. You can register at, what's the site?
MBBikeTheDrive.org.
Okay. And again, you want to get out there early when the birds are chirping and you can hear the waves.
Yep.
And it's beautiful in the sunrise, 7 a.m. There's so much more to talk about, Claire. I mean, I want to know where we're at with pedestrian safety. Obviously, we saw in the last couple of years a couple of experiments about changing the way we do crosswalks. We also have seen up on Argyle Street, you know, a production where there's a street without cars. I mean, there's so much going on in Chicago that the Active Transportation Alliance can fill us in on. So you got to come back, okay?
We will do.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200. It's good to hear from Claire talking about Bike to Drive. Tonight was the Ride of Silence, which is an annual ride in honor of people who were killed or hurt on their bike. It's throughout the country. It was scheduled here in Chicago for 6:30, so it's probably over by now. But seven Chicago area cyclists have died on the road in each of the last 2 years. So as much as we talk about it being the infrastructure and everything becoming more and more of a world-class city, and we kind of talked in the promo that ran all day about the idea of is Chicago a town that could rival European cities like Amsterdam or Copenhagen for sort of the marker of best mm-hmm. bike city in the world? Not likely. If you've been to Amsterdam or Copenhagen, it's like a math problem. Have you ever been?
No.
It is a straight-up mess, a chaotic mess of bikes and trains and pedestrians that all know what they're doing, and you're like, I'm going to die.
So where are the bikes? Where are they riding in?
They've created lanes. They've almost split the lanes evenly. So you have on a street, a cobblestone street in Amsterdam, you'll have half of the road is for bikes, half of the road is for cars, and like a sliver's for pedestrians. And then there's also the tram that runs along, like almost like the old streetcar kind of thing, but trams that run along the street. So it is just like it's unbelievable urban choreography. And the big thing is that the bike traffic is, it's monstrous.
Is it everywhere? Like it's every street?
I don't know. I mean, maybe not. Like, I'm just talking about some big thoroughfares, but the bike traffic, we're talking hundreds of bikes. It's not like in Chicago, like when you're on Elston, you're like, wow, there are 9 bikes on Elston right now. I mean, you're talking like 300. Just wow. Like, and it's just how people get around there.
When I used to live in Bucktown, I used to ride my bike to work a lot. And yeah, Milwaukee Avenue, same thing. It was like, at times there were tons and tons of bikers there.
Right. Now imagine that times 10. I mean, because it was just, I mean, especially down in like the central area of Amsterdam, it's just like, and they know where you're going, and you're just like, I'm just going to put, and you're like, someone grabs you and pulls you back. Like, watch out, man, you're about to die from getting hit by trains and bikes. Could Chicago be like that? I mean, we see what's on Dearborn, you know, where they have the lights now and the protected lanes. We see what's happening on Kinzie downtown here, heading out. And you heard Claire talking about more of a push to the suburbs. If you ride in the area and maybe you've been an active cyclist in other areas, give us a call or text us now and let us know if Chicago stacks up. Is Chicago on the right path? So to speak, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's talk about it. I think it is, just being someone who had a bike in the early 90s in Chicago. And I had one throughout, but I remember when I was at Columbia College, I would bike down to, I lived in Roscoe Village, and I would bike down to my new job at Transitions Book Place, which we could do an hour on, a self-help bookstore that used to be. And people probably remember it, but it used to be, it was a self-help kind of new age spiritual bookstore that they were moving into their new space, which is now like a Hannig footwear, next to the Whole Foods / Best Buy that was in that North and Sheffield area.
Oh, yeah.
Not the new Whole Foods, but remember where the old one was?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It was in that mall. And so I would ride my bike down there, and I was just like, oh, this is the best thing ever. And, you know, you get knocked off it once, maybe squeezed between a car and a bus. That's always a good thing. But, like, I just felt myself having no fear in doing it the more I did it. And I got the bike stolen when I moved to Lincoln Square. This would be, like, 1996.
Lincoln Square, horrible neighborhood.
Entirely different neighborhood. This is pre-Old Town School of Folk Music.
Oh, yeah, different.
Yeah, this is
where the hippies came in, took over.
And they came in with their guitars and their lattes and their double wide strollers. It destroyed Lincoln Square as we knew it. There would be times when you'd walk out of your apartment in Lincoln Square and a guy in lederhosen would be walking by.
Oh yeah, oh
and
yeah,
you're like,
of course.
Well,
yeah,
that's not a thing. That's new. I'll follow this guy, see where the party's at. But after I got the bike stolen, someone like kicked out the like I had a, you know, the stairwell and the fire escape on the back of our apartment. It was wood, you know. Someone like saw kicked out the like the banister or whatever to get to the bike, and it was like a crappy Schwinn. It's like that's a lot of work. Yeah. I still think it was the kid upstairs.
Oh.
Yeah, I bothered him for like a year later. Just every time I saw him, I'm like, where's my bike, man? 312-981-7200. Do you think Chicago is a bike-friendly city? Do you ride to work? Are you afraid to ride to work? Are you a victim of, you know, bad planning here in the city of Chicago? I know I did bike to work. Now, I'll talk about it after the news. We're already late, but I'll tell you about a bike to work experiment that I did last year. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
I've got a bike, you can ride it if you'd like. It's got a basket, a bell and rims and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed
it. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, talking biking in Chicago and the suburbs. Claire kind of mentioned, Claire McDermott was on from Active Transportation Alliance, about in the suburbs, trails will just end. And so, like, depot into big lanes of traffic. So, like, you'll be on a nice trail in the middle of the prairie, and then the next thing you know, you're on Butterfield Road in front of a Best Buy, right? Hey.
Scary.
Yeah, right? 312-981-7200. We're talking about whether or not Chicago is a bike-friendly city. Let's go to Harold. Harold, welcome to the download. What do you think? Is Chicago a bike-friendly city?
I think so. I think it is. It's come a long way. I was telling your producer a moment ago, back when I was younger, I'm not sure how old you are, but let's say 30 years ago, if somebody told you that that the buses would lean down and pick up a wheelchair person, you'd go, what is this guy smoking? You know, what are you talking about? And they found a way to do it. And the same thing when you're riding a bike. I mean, I used to ride a bike. I used to, you know, you're just riding traffic and, you know, and you wondered which way to go because they always told you to ride against the traffic. And
right.
You can see the car come in. It's like that's, you know, when I see people do that, I'm like, you're going the wrong way.
Yeah, now we know a lot more about biking. Yeah.
Yeah, the arrows are pointing, you know, north. Go north. That's on the side of the street, you know. But the bike lanes are massive in some places. And, you know, and you know, gotta say that you know I appreciate it. I think that most bike people do. I mean, it's changed a lot, and it's very helpful.
Have you ever been to Amsterdam?
No, I don't. But actually, my newest bike is actually from Copenhagen.
Well, there you go. See,
so it's
that's legit.
My newest one is a cargo bike, so I can it's. The handlebars are obviously right in front of the seat, but then in front of the handlebars is a deck that's about almost 3 feet long, real low to the ground, and the wheels in front of that. So the whole bike is like 8.5 feet long.
Wow!
But it was made and built in Copenhagen and shipped here, and they'll spend the rest of its life here. But
well, they know what they're doing. Thanks, Harold. Thanks for that.
Yeah,
that's There you go. That's if you're going to get a bike, I guess get it from Copenhagen. 708 says, if bikes use so much of our streets, is it unfair for them to pay or to ask them to pay for a road use tax? And, that's a great point, 708, because I am a friend of the bikes. I feel like I'm in Game of Thrones. I am a friend of the bikes. Tell your family. Tell the Snows I'm a friend of the bikes. I don't even watch the show, but you can tell how just talented I am. Hey, there's darkness on the other side. Pedal fast, faster. All right. I brought this up and actually got some play out of this about 5 years ago. It got retweeted and pushed around and people sort of point. I said, if you're going to go through all this protected bike lane, why not have a little UPC code? That's almost like if I have to get a sticker for my car, why don't bike riders have to get a sticker for their bikes? If you're going to be able to, Alderman Cardenas was here talking about like a suburban tax. It's going to be $6 to get into the city. We're going to be just like San Francisco. You can't get in unless you pay $7 to, any of the bridges, things like that. Why not do that with bikes as well? That you have to have like a city sticker.
Don't you think that you want to get more people to bike for the environment? Get people out of their cars, and why would you punish people to get out of their cars?
It's not. It's just saying that if you're going to build infrastructure,
if you want
protected bike lanes, things.
I could see that if you're going to use that money to pay for making things better, making Chicago a.
You could pay for those cargo bikes that Harold was talking about.
Do we have sidewalks taxes?
Yeah, it's just called taxes, right?
So you know where? Can I not use the sidewalk unless I pay for it?
Yesterday I had a funny tax thing where I'm kind of disputing the new garbage pickup tax because my association already has a tax that we pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of and I forgot to give the woman who manages the property is like, you have to bring the bill to me so I can have it. I'm like, I will. Yesterday, I came home, the garbage was not picked up.
Oh.
Like, it was just out there. Everyone else's was picked up, and mine wasn't.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, did I do something wrong? Did I like, anger someone on the radio that they're like, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, buddy?
I'll show you.
Let's see if you get that garbage for another week. But, I think they just missed it because I think that my cans were kind of, they're green and it was camouflaged by this big kind of bush that's by my
alley. I don't know. I don't think they missed that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You're out, buddy.
Yeah.
I think that maybe I'm delinquent in my bill. Would they be that specific? Like, would they be able to see the address on the can and be like, nope, 13-10, he hadn't paid yet. Like that kind of thing? I don't like that. Like, it makes it feel like maybe they scan the can. Beep, he is delinquent. Oh, man. Oh, that just scares me. So anyway, yeah. Esmeralda, do you ride a bike?
I do in the summer. I'm a baby, I can't.
Do you like riding the bike downtown?
I do, because I do specifically ride to and from work.
Nice.
And I do enjoy the fact that there are lanes, because a lot of people, and it's on both sides, both bike riders and drivers, most of them don't respect each other. So there's a lot of dangerous things. I've fallen twice off my bike. I got doored.
Oh, man.
One day. No fault of the driver. It was a cab. It was the person in the driver's. Or so in the passenger.
He got out of the car.
Right. He got out of his car and did not care that he had just hit someone.
Did you hit the ground?
No, but my bike just rammed into me.
Oh, gosh, man. So, that's like my biggest fear.
Yeah, it was great. He had no care in the world. He just told me I should have been more careful.
Really? They didn't even check your well-being?
Yeah. I'm going to just go with old rich man. Because then he walked into the one of the steakhouses as if nothing happened.
He's like,
and I'm
like, I got to get to my steak.
Hello? No? Not even going to say sorry?
You
okay, thank you
hipster,
so much.
You hipster biker almost stopped me from getting my big porterhouse.
Yeah. He pretty much was just, you should be more careful. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, it was your fault. But
okay.
You know.
You just blindly opened a door
right
to your
in
car
the downtown area.
In the downtown area, and I should be more careful.
It's fine.
I had when I was just in San Francisco, and I had a situation where I had a rental, and I was driving around San Francisco trying to, you know, navigate it with the car, and it was like around rush hour, and there's a bunch of this sort of strange parking where you pulled in and you're like, oh, that's, you can't park here. Oh, this is a 5 minute. You can only park here for 5 minutes. Oh, put a quarter. Anyway, so like I was doing so good. It was rush hour and I was like really doing well. And I saw a spot that like opened up and I went for it. And I almost like clipped a biker. Like I almost knocked him off his bike. And I'm like, oh, and he's like, hey, you know, swore at me or something. I'm like, sorry. You know, I did the head down, hand up kind of move, you know, like, oh, it's me. It's me. Everyone's okay. And my favorite part was there was a biker maybe like a block later, and about 15, 20 seconds later, he comes up like, watch where you're going. And I'm like, oh, what are you, the bike police? Sorry, I'm sorry that had nothing to do with you, buddy. Don't make – and I went from sorry, you know, put my hand up to like, I'm going to get out of the car and kick your ass. Like I was like, oh, this had nothing to do with you, man. Like I started to get like bike rage. But I held it in. And then I held it in because there were people in the car. Mm-hmm. But I was going to get out and run. I was going to run after that biker. Just
jump on his back.
I was going to be like a Captain America where I just am really fast, like run fast. People forget that. The Captain America can run as fast as a car.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, you see it in the movie. You're like, oh, he's running as fast as that car. Man, Cap can do anything.
I guess I never really realized what Captain America can do.
He can do it all.
He's so really Superman. Why does he get in two cars then?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Might as well just run.
He has, like, I mean, I think it was the first Captain America movie where he has that big chase scene after he's made into Captain America where he chases, like, the spy. And it's, like, hardcore. He swims, like, he catches the submarine.
Oh, wow. So,
like, it's like, he's got, like, a serious, like, he can run and not get winded. I guess that's a thing.
Maybe because he was new at the time.
Yeah, it was like, brand
newer. Now he's a little less. He's got a few miles on him now. So.
He had a fully charged battery. He came out. He's like, whoa, man, I can run long distances. Captain America. I don't even know if that's a song, but.
Should be.
Does he get older?
He doesn't, no.
No?
No, that's
no,
the
whole way
for,
the
no, lore
of
this character.
Story.
So they do some awesome CG where they make that actor look really, really puny.
Right.
Like, and he's too puny to be in the army. And then he meets Stanley Tucci, and he's like, I'm going to change you.
No, I know
experiment.
That. I know right. That whole thing, but...
So then he becomes the Captain America, and because of that, he doesn't age.
Oh.
Like, it's some, or it's some weird thing where they freeze him, maybe? There's some freezing.
Because they
going
froze
on.
Him for a bunch of time, and then they unfreeze him. So I can understand not getting old then.
Yeah, right. And he's been frozen and unfrozen so many times now that there's got to be side effects, right?
It can't be good. I mean, you can't freeze and refreeze a piece of chicken.
Right.
Why could you freeze and refreeze Captain America?
He's like, hey, Iron Man, there's something wrong with my ankle. It's just not responding.
Refrozen chicken does not taste that great after unfreezing again.
All right, we're way off. We're way off talking about bikes, and we got into refreezing and reheating chicken, which is a good point. And Captain, we bring it all back to the fact that are you the Captain America of biking? 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Coming up after the news, we're going to hear from Character Flaws, a combination and collection of some great sketch comedians, improvisers, and characters. We do it every Wednesday night. We'll do it after the 10:30. 224 says, yes, Justin, you're probably delinquent with the garbage bill. It happened to me. They did not pick up my garbage, and then I called them, and they said I did not pay the bill. Regards, Romy from Antioch. I feel like... I've never paid a garbage bill, and then, you know, they're doing the whole thing now where they're putting it all together, and it just hasn't been enough time yet to say that I'm delinquent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, something's fishy.
Yeah, and not just the garbage.
Hey-o!
Yeah, I feel like maybe they just missed it.
If it's camouflaged.
It could have been camouflaged. I didn't do a good job. You know, and also, they could have changed when they come, because I've got them down now to, like, when they show up, so... Like, I had gone out, and I came back, and I put it out, and I didn't notice if they had already come out. So maybe
that's probably what it is, actually.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're pros. They deal with elements and things, blocking things. And
yeah, right. 773 says Captain America should be called Captain Listeria. good. That's the Esmeralda's point. And 312 says, I heard an argument whether Captain America was a virgin or not due to him being frozen after World War II and missing the sexual revolution of the 60s. That's a thought. Like, maybe he just, like, was missed all. Like, maybe he's like a kid from the 40s who was like, I'm not having sex till I'm married. Then he got frozen. He skipped the 60s where everyone's like, it's okay to have sex when you're not married, man.
Like Austin Powers?
Yeah, he's like reverse Austin Powers. I could see that. And then he comes out and he's, because every time he's like unfrozen, right, he's like, it's time to, oh my God, you got to get to war. Right? So, yeah. He does have a kiss in the new Captain America movie.
Hey, you saw it.
Yeah, I did see it.
You sat through all the 15 minutes of commercials.
I lost my...
Did you like it?
I did like it. You know, it could have been better. I'll be honest. Like, this whole sort of like, oh my God, now that's how you make a movie. Batman versus Superman. Marvel is kicking your butt. I'm like, yeah. Nah, not really. I mean, to me, it's the same. It's a ton of fighting, and the idea of the superheroes kind of fighting each other. Okay. Okay.
Hmm. It's because it's getting really good reviews.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I'm not. I say this all the time because I see movies, you know, mostly for the job, and I'm not a movie critic. You know, I don't know what's good and what's bad, and I just know how it affects me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's part of me that's just like, oh God, you really need to. Shut up, Iron Man. Just like Robert Downey Jr.'s got that chiseled facial hair, like the guy from the Pirates. He's got the same thing in the movie, like a super goatee. It's like just so like the kind of thing where you really, when he's got a close up, like, listen, Cap, this is how it's going to be. You're like, you've shaved your goatee, your mustache, like down. You could see like the white part of your lip. Like you have crafted a mustache. I just don't have a lot of... I don't trust those people. It's your craft, a mustache. Like, you've done so much manscaping on, like, the hair around your face. You didn't just let it grow in. You cut... Like an Ozzie Guillen. Ozzie Guillen is like Iron Man. It's the same facial hair deal. All right, coming up, character flaws. Stay with us.
It's just a character flaw.
It's Wednesday night, so we bring you character flaws here on The Download. Hi, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman. This, of course, is our segment where we bring you sketch comedy, improv, performance characters for some of the best in Chicago. Kind of put it all together in one package. Tonight, we will be we'll be visited by The Download's girlfriend, and also The Download's daughter's prom date's going to show up. So we got that going on. But before we get to that... You know what? Tonight is a big news night, and that always means that it's important to get a promo in before we start. So welcoming back to the show, Bill Braunschweiger. He's going to give us the 10 o'clock news at 10 on 10. Bill, what's coming up at the 10 o'clock news at 10 on 10?
Well, thank you for asking, Justin. Tonight on 10 News is 10 o'clock news at 10. Primary Watch. Has the recent controversy shaken America's faith in the process by which we decide who decides what to decide in whatever the Electoral College is? Plus, our experts predict just exactly what year the 2016 election will end. And then, what's Hillary Clinton hiding from the voters? And if it's nothing more than underwear, then why all the clothes? And terrorism. Baghdad is savaged by attacks as being greeted as Liberators Watch reaches day 4,802. Plus, 10 News at 10 will bring you all the latest in sports. Suspense rises in NHL playoffs. Will they end before the next season begins? And the Oklahoma Thunder, what sport do they play? We'll have the latest. And is 40 the new 30? And if so, what does that make 50? We'll talk to one mathematician who's figured out that 63 is the new 14. All this, and did I miss the Irving Park stop? Along with weather on the 10s, sports on the 5s, and traffic every single minute. And the time, right now, it's 10:35. Wait, 10:36. At your source for all the time, news, sports, weather, traffic, VCR repair, maritime law, and what's everyone doing this weekend? Because I have an improv show. On the 10 o'clock news.
There you go. Bill Braunschweiger with the 10 o'clock news at 10 on 10. Always a pleasure to have Bill.
I'm Justin.
Oh, Yeah, hey, it's...
Hi, Pete. Justin, can we talk for a second?
It's the Downloads Frustrated Girlfriend, everybody.
Are you done?
No, I still have to the end of the show. It's 11 o'clock.
Okay, till 11 o'clock.
Right.
At 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah.
You expect me to believe that you have to be here till 11 o'clock every night?
I don't know what to tell you. I've been doing this for a year, from 7 to 11 o'clock. That's the show.
Okay, you've never said that to
me.
I've said
it all
the time. It's like I'm supposed to be a mind reader or something. Like every day when you leave the house, it's like, oh, bye, I'm going to work. And it's like this, you know, specificity is going to be key in us communicating clearly.
I thought I made it very clear I had a show. I mean, it's on all the websites and all the materials.
Okay, so I don't have a show. So I don't have a show. Therefore, everything has to stop and everybody has to, like, you know, bow down to your schedule because you have a show. So now I'm being punished because I don't have a show every night on WGN from 7 to 11.
No, I'm just saying I have a show, so I can't go anywhere until it's over.
So you're rubbing it in my face.
I'm not rubbing anything. What are you talking about? No. You just go across.
You know, I was talking to Missy earlier, and do you know what Andrew did for her?
No.
He, like, took her out last night. Like, just surprised her and took her out to a dinner.
Well, I can't do that. I got a show to do.
Just on a regular weeknight.
I know. I would love to take you to dinner.
Would you? Because I don't see that effort. I am double parked on Michigan Avenue. Are we or are we not going to make our reservation at Boca?
We're not. Because I have to be on the air till
11. Okay. Do you know how hard it is to get a reservation there? And no. I called in a favor because this was going to be the night that we reconnected.
Can we do it after the show? Can we do it at 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock. No. No. Nobody goes to dinner at 11 o'clock, okay? Except for people that, like, work in factories.
Well, or people who have radio shows till 11 o'clock.
Nobody has radio shows. You say that that's, like, a thing that, like, oh, my gosh, all these people have radio shows.
I do. I'm on the air till 11 o'clock. What's the matter? Why can't you
get that? I feel like these are all excuses, okay? Because, like, Missy and Andrew don't have this problem where, like, when she wants to go out on a weeknight, he's like, oh, I have a radio show.
Yes, I'm Missy and Andrew are nice people, but Andrew's an accountant. He works 9 to 5. I work 11 o'clock.
Yeah, he works 9 to 5. And you know what? I bet he told them, I would like to work 9 to 5. And when they said, we'd like you to work from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m., he had the backbone to say no.
Well, I like the show. I like working till...
You like the show more than me. Is basically what I'm hearing.
That's not what I'm saying. I have a shift. This is a show. It's
well,
the
when I make a reservation for dinner and then I show up to pick you up because I could just have you take a cab there and meet me. But right. I was like, no, I think it would be a sweet gesture to come pick you up. Double parked on Michigan Avenue. Do you know how hard it is to double park on Michigan Avenue? The car is probably being towed right now. Yeah. Okay.
I know how annoying it is to double park on
Michigan Avenue, so you know what? I get it. So you're calling me annoying.
I'm not.
That's what I heard.
I'm just saying that it just seems very entitled. But all right.
Okay. How about this? I go across the street to Purple Pig. I have two glasses of rosé. And when you're done, you come over there and you get me and we'll go to Boca.
It sounds great. I will pick you up at 11:15.
That is... Why are you doing this? Why are you pulling away? You know what? You never buy me Jenny's ice cream.
It's like $12 a pint.
Oh, so I'm not worth $12 a pint? How much am I worth? I would like you to put a price tag on this relationship. You're going to get like a Dean's square box of ice cream.
It's good ice cream.
From Mariano's?
Sure.
No. So can we or can we not go to my sister's wedding on Friday night?
No, I told you 4 months ago. No, I can't. We have a show. We're until 11.
It's her wedding.
Your sister gets married a lot.
Twice
that we know about.
More than two more times than me and you. Two more times than me and you.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Okay, enough. All right? But I'm here right now, so let's go.
We can't go. I can't go till 11 o'clock.
I'm here right now, so call in sick. Make this guy do it.
That's Pete. He's got to do
it. He can do it. Look, he's got the headphones on. There's a microphone. Have him do it. You guys... Go to commercial every 28 seconds. How hard is this job? Okay. Just string together 19 commercials for Cars for Kids.
We already did. That's...
I'm over it.
Okay.
I knew I should have dated a weatherman. They get off at 10.
Well, 10:30.
Whatever. Earlier than 11.
Downloads Frustrated Girlfriend, everybody. More to come here on the Character Flaws. downloads Frustrated Girlfriend. She's so frustrated. She's so frustrated with the time. She's also known as Kate James, and Bill Braunschweiger is also known as Adam Witt. Much more to come here. Character flaws. Till 11. Stay with us. It's just a character flaw. Welcome back to Character Flaws. Of course, this is our Wednesday night jam session for improv, sketch comedy, characters, performance, because it's Chicago. It's the mecca of this kind of stuff. So we thought we'd bring some performances and characters to the forefront. You know, it's always tough being here this late, as you saw from the Downloads Girlfriend. It's also tough being a parent. You know, the Downloads daughter is... you know, this is prom season, so she's getting ready for prom. She's not ready yet, but her date is here. It's annoying. The Downloads daughter's date is in studio now. I guess you can hang out. She's not ready. You can just sit right there.
Hi, hello. Hi. Hi, how are you, sir? It's great to meet you. My name's Sandy. How are you? It's good to meet you. Good to meet you. How are you? How are you? Nice pipe. No shake? That's cool. Okay. Is your daughter upstairs or she's down here?
She's gonna be ready in like 10 minutes. What'd you say your name was?
Yeah, my name's Sandy. Sandy. Great. Yeah, good to meet you. Good to meet you. So love the decor in here. Love it. Like the dead deer head. Very nice. And the American flag and the got the nice wood paneling in the back. Yeah, very, very nice. It's a very nice, warming and welcoming place. Really like it. Really like it. Great, 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 great. So I know your daughter from high school. That's where we go. We're in chemistry, study hall, biology, lockers on top of each other. You know, she has the cutest little spiral notebook that I just love. I think it's just so cute. She got the art from the Hans Christian Lassen with the horses and the dolphins and the under the sea sort of like, you know, villages that live under there with the treasure chest and the dolphins like bursting out with energy and love and his beautiful rainbow colors. I'm sure you've seen that 100 times and she's just lovely. She's really great. I mean, I don't like her. Don't worry. Stop looking at me like that. I don't like her. I mean, I like her just like from the neck up, just like from here on here, like from here down. Don't like. Not that I don't like it. I don't mean that. I do like it, but you know what I mean.
Cool.
I got her a corsage for the date, so that's pretty cool. And I'm like, please don't poke her in the boobs. But oh my god, I can't believe I just said boobs. I just said it again. Boobs. Boobs! I can't stop saying it. Oh my God, what am I saying boobs for? God, I have such a bad case of cotton mouth. I'd be putting Eli Whitney to shame over here. Would you like a Tic Tac?
No, I do not want a Tic Tac.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I have a whole box of them right here.
Why don't you eat the Tic Tacs and we'll just sit here quietly?
It's not just a box of them. It's one of the bulk boxes that I got from Costco. So it's like 32 Tic Tac individual cases.
All right.
So that's like what? Like 900 Tic Tacs. Taking a pass?
Yeah.
You sure? Final round. 3 for me. It hurts when you swallow them. About a year ago, I was on a tour on a cruise ship with my grandma, and we went to Alaska. So we flew into Seattle, SeaTac, Seattle, Tacoma Airport, and we went on a 7-day cruise all throughout the Inside Passage. It was absolutely beautiful. Ketchikan's a port of call, Skagway's a port of call, Juneau's a port of call, and they have the captain on the big loudspeaker saying things like, whales casting, port side, go to the left side, port side, whales casting right now, go and see them as through, go through Glacier Bay, and if you want, grab a cup of tea. We just get the tea and I do my crosswords. It was so much fun. Do you ever take a cruise or travel? You ever do anything like that?
No.
My grandma says I talk too much, but that's why recently I've been trying to do some crosswords. I'm really getting into crossword puzzles. So, like, you know, the crosswords, you've seen those. Of course, you've seen those with a clue, and then you fill in the word, like, actor Alda. So, Alan. Like, you know, mountain range in Asia, you're all. U-R-A-L. Not like you're all, but that's one that pops up. Mimicked. Aped. That's like a four-letter word. Woodwind relative. What would that be? Oboe. That's a good one. So I think I am going to go wait in the car. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time. Is that okay with you?
I think that's probably best.
That's best. Okay. I'm going to go wait in the car. I'm going to be right outside. And by the way, sir, just so you know, if you're worried that something's going to happen, don't, because I brought something. So
what did you bring?
My grandma. She's in the back. Good night.
It's the Downloads daughter's date. For the prom who came early, he's just going to sit in the car. Also,
known as, well, his name is Sandy Marshall. Great night there. There we go. Character flaws, of course, are presentation of sketch comedy, improv characters, and alike. We'll take a break. We'll wrap it up. Stay with us. Well, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez coming up next here on 720 WGN Radio. Tomorrow night, Robbie Foulkes is going to be here. He's got a new album out. Love when Robbie comes through. Such a great musician. Huge, consummate Chicago professional musician who really makes this music scene and the city better. So we'll talk with Robbie Foulkes tomorrow. He'll be my guest at the big table. Also, Tony Carman's going to be here to talk about Chicago Art Expo, which is I think that's a big announcement tomorrow. A lot of good stuff. Mark Conkle is going to be here from DNA Info. Talk about, he's got a great story today about the superintendent, Eddie Johnson. And we'll talk about that, just about, you know, he's starting to make his, Eddie Johnson was on Rokan today, superintendent. He's starting to make his rounds and, you know, it's the first time he's sort of done his media thing. So we'll talk to Mark about what he knows about Superintendent Johnson and what we should know tomorrow on the program. Well, that's going to do it tonight. Pete, did the Cubs are still playing, right?
Yep. 12th inning.
Wow. They really haven't, I told you they're going to have trouble with the Brew Crew.
They seem to have troubles with teams that they should beat handily.
You know, I wonder what that's about, because in Major League Baseball, aren't all the players essentially close to the same? You know, like the Milwaukee Brewers have Ryan Braun and All-Stars and people like that, and I always hear that all the time. Well, they play down to maybe the record, but that there's a lot of things that go into the record. Are the Cubs that much better than any other Major League Baseball team that's out there? So it's always like the Padres, I heard that. They always play down to the Padres. I'm like, Matt Kemp's on that team.
Yeah, they're more talented than
they're just more talented.
I think so.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Nelson tonight.
Pitchers, you know, that's the Brewers' best pitcher. So,
yeah,
they'll come out of it okay. I think they're going to be okay, Justin.
I think the one thing we're learning about baseball is that it is baseball, and it is 162 games long. And if we're going to keep up this pace of like, what happened in a Cubs game? I can't breathe. What happened to the Sox game? We're not gonna make it.
No idea, Bob, how the Cubs will rebound from this one tonight. Two straight losses to the Brew Crew. We'll be back right after this.
Exactly, right? Also, Rob, did I hear it right? Did the Golden State Warriors win a playoff game in the Western Conference Final by 30 points?
They did indeed. Let me give you that final score one more time, Bob. In Oakland, California tonight, the series now tied at a game apiece as the Golden State Warriors beat the Thunder 118-91.
118-91.
Incredible.
That was like sort of what the Bulls did at the end of last year when they lost the Heat by like 20, 25 points in a clutch game.
Is it just me or does Steph Curry really have an odd shot?
He does. I mean,
it's an unorthodox. I mean, obviously everything goes in for the guy, but it's unorthodox.
It is. It's not this sort of pure shot. But, well, there you go.
We can dissect that one all night.
We'll see if Patty will get us through the first 2 hours just talking about Steph Curry's shot.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll love that.
Steph Curry with the shot.
Yeah.